Warning, Star Trek From the Holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire.
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel. We are energizing transporter beam. Now.
Alright, hello, welcome everyone. This is Star Trek From the Holodeck, the Discovery Edition. And you're listening to us via Rain Man Digital. You can find all of our shows, past, present, and in the future, on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. Just search Star Trek From the Holodeck. I am Michael Flores, your host, and with me today on the bridge of the USS Rain Man Digital is my science officer, David.
How's it going, everybody?
He's non-binary as well, please. So please, be respectful.
Remember, to know your pronouns, Mike. Know your pronouns.
Didn't you say you wanted to be known as an it a few episodes ago? And I had to be like, what the fuck?
I think that's the safest thing to do. Just refer to me as an it.
Well, you are a monster. If you knew David in real life, you would not argue that. That's so rude.
But so true.
All right, Dave. So we're going to be discussing episode 12 of season 3, titled There Is a Tide. We're almost at the end of season 3.
Yes.
For the most part, it's been a great season with very, very few bumps in the way of narrative until the last two episodes. Very strange.
Very, very strange. Yeah.
The show has been consistent, and I definitely wouldn't say the show is bad the last two episodes, but there are some red flags that are starting to pile up. They were thrown everywhere, and now they're just piling up on the ground. But because the season has been stellar, I'd say about 98% of the time, we are also dealing with some really great things.
Yeah.
And these episodes are just not an example of some of their best work this season. And when I say these episodes, I'm including in this episode 11 and this current episode that we're going to be discussing.
Yes.
I understand that these episodes, where do we begin, Dave? Where do we begin?
Well, the thing is, it's basically like what I mentioned in our last episode, how they end up throwing so many things at the audience, hoping something sticks. And sure, something sticks, but then you miss on the other things.
You know what also sticks when you throw it at the wall? Shit.
Because the thing was, I mean, like, there's elements in this episode that I did really enjoy.
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt.
I mean, like,
Maybe I set the wrong tone. People are like, oh, these guys are fucking trolls this episode. Fuck them. No, the episode was good, but I was like, listen, there's some problems.
There's some problems. There's red flags, just like what you said, because, like, at the end of this episode, I'm like going, what freaking story are they trying to tell?
Yeah, it's getting
strange.
What
are they trying to tell now? Because, I
mean, listen, Dave, conclusions, you know, bringing a story to an end, it isn't an easy task. No. It isn't. Setups are the easiest, typically.
Yeah.
But knocking that ball out the park, only the very best can accomplish that in a satisfying manner.
It says a lot that basically, if you were to actually look back at not just Star Trek, but I mean, in a lot of shows the past year, a lot of shows have fell flat when it comes to trying to wrap up.
Oh, it's an epidemic. Finale.
It's a constant. And
yeah,
if there's one thing I have fully learned as someone who uses the TV shows that we cover and to actually learn more about writing, mm-hmm. the one lesson I've pulled out from this past year, it is extremely difficult, but very important to get your ending right, to get to the finish line of your story, because like you can do a fantastic setup. I mean, Discovery is a really good example of this right now. Fantastic setup. All the episodes. I mean, I went back and counted 10 episodes out of the 13 are A-plus material.
Yeah.
And you, when you stumble to the finish line, you still it's for some strange reason for writers, it's so difficult to get on the same page and get the show across the finish line.
Because now, David, I do agree with you. And objectively, you bring up some good points, because objectively speaking, the episodes, we've been rating them 90s, which 90s. I guess is an A, right?
Yeah.
Very good. And because the episodes have been very good, suddenly we're given episodes that are just average. And I feel like that's why we're screaming that the sky is falling, because yes. We're like, what the fuck's happening? You know, so it's not bad episodes, but we're also dealing with episodes that are not nearly as good as the previous 10. And because of that, it's making me feel uncomfortable and I'm starting to get nervous for the ending. Mm-hmm. Now, the highlight of this episode for me was having Admiral Vance on Asira pair off and you essentially get them to talk.
Same here. That was cool.
Do just like the scene between Kovich and Giorgio and how it helped flesh out ideas, concepts, and the layouts of the century we find ourselves in as an audience. We learned a lot about the Emerald Chain.
Yeah.
As well as the Federation. But most importantly, we learned a lot about Vance himself. There's got to be a bigger reason behind much of what we heard when it comes to accountability. Will we see the Admiral have to face some consequences? As we know, the Federation, in order to survive, had to make some compromises, which we will get into that in a moment. That's going to be a big element we're going to discuss today.
Yeah.
Tilly has been given the opportunity to take back the ship,
which is something that should happen.
I laughed so hard when Zara said that the Emerald may be so upset with how inept you are and beg us to keep you. I was like, yeah, I was thinking the exact same fucking thing. If I was Emerald fans, I'd be like, can you just fucking like take them, please? Jesus Christ. I've been saying this is going to happen all season. The importance of Discovery. Please do not put the Discovery vessel in harm's way. It is literally the lifeline of the Federation.
Let's not listen to that.
Dude, I fucking love Jake Weber. His delivery is so fucking good as Zareth.
Dude, I'm so happy he came back.
It's Zara, right? Zara, yeah.
And I'm so happy he came back.
Oh, yeah, dude. I mean, giddy.
His episode, I still say, could honestly be one of the best villains.
He should have been the villain,
man.
Should have been the villain. I mean, talk about building up someone from day one. As this, oh man, the smooth talking, just arrogant.
Jaded.
Jaded. Yeah.
Like, the thing is like, with Zara is like this, the same kind of motivation like Khan, when you think about it. He's a man who's abandoned and basically says, screw the system. The system failed me. I want revenge. I was laughing so hard when he shows up. I'm going, oh, crap. He's part of Osiris' crew. Well, all right. Cool. This is awesome.
Yeah, I got happy with that. Burnham. Let's see. Burnham was willing to sacrifice members of her crew.
What the hell?
To save the spore drive.
That was my what the hell. I have it here on my notes. I have WTH. Burnham sacrifices Stamets.
David, it's WTF.
WTH. WTH for me.
Oh, you're so unique. You're starting your own. If you were to do that like as a hashtag, no one would know what that is.
I know. It's just me. But I put in my notes, is like, that was my WTH moment. Was all this time, Burnham, I'm like going, Did you not learn anything?
Well, okay, Dave. So I'd applaud her for making the hard decision if she hadn't made numerous emotionally compromised decisions all season.
That's the problem.
I was like, all right, that's a little hypocritical there, Burnham.
Suddenly, I'm of sane of mind.
Suddenly, you go. You're claiming the moral high ground. No, this is for the good of the ship. Stamets, I'm going to eject you into space.
And
it's for the good of the ship. Stamets is like, listen, I should have fucking ejected your ass when you tried to save Book and put all of us at risk.
Did I do it? No. But like,
I know time travel has been banned, but I'm going to go back in time and eject your ass out.
This moment was the one that you mentioned in the last episode about consequences. This has to have consequences.
It has to. Yeah.
I'm sorry. You just jettisoned three crew members into the...
Not three crew members.
It was just Stamets.
Yeah.
It was just Stamets.
Stamets counts as three now.
But she jettisoned Stamets without even a second thought.
Yeah.
And I'm going, that's cold-blooded.
Now, as you said, consequences, right?
Consequences.
So I think the way it was done, it will probably sow seeds of resentment. Whether Culbert, Saru, and Adira are rescued, it doesn't matter. There's got to be some type of resentment there moving forward.
Oh, yeah.
How can you not see the hypocrisy? Stamets is, I mean, look at Stamets' face. Like, we went into the future with you so you wouldn't be alone, and you're about to fucking let my loved ones die when you, at the first chance you get, go and rescue your loved ones without thinking anything. So,
dude, if they don't,
they have to. It would be a huge, it would be such a missed opportunity. There is an argument to make that what she did was highly unethical. I would say that.
Yes.
But when you have a ship filled with a bunch of people that don't follow orders and continue to make emotional decisions, what else can you do besides using the Vulcan neck pinch? Hey, this wouldn't happen on any other vessel that we've ever seen in Star Trek. But because this crew is the most unprofessional crew we've ever been exposed to in Trek, what else do you do? You can't command people. And I don't know if Burnham's in charge of Stamets. I don't know the ranks, how it falls. Is the chief engineer ahead of the chief of science? I don't know. But either way, can you imagine Riker doing that to Data or Worf, or Worf doing it to Data?
Never.
Yeah, it's very strange. What else do you do? No one follows orders on this ship. So when someone doesn't follow orders, you have to make decisions like this. I mean, they're going to put phasers to stun and shoot you, or I'm going to Vulcan neck pinch your ass.
even in the darker series that me and you have always brought up in Star Trek with Deep Space Nine, we have never had this moment where basically, oh yeah, I'm going to sacrifice someone, but it's never going to have consequences. Never.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
I was like going, this has to be big.
It has to. Yeah, absolutely. All right, so as per usual, we have a lot to sort through, but first, help us stay on the air through 2021 and beyond. I know I say this every single discussion, but it is very important to help us stay afloat by subscribing to patreon.com/rainmandigital, because that's the only way we can survive and continue to do shows. We don't make a lot of money in the way of ad revenue. The most help we can get is from Patreon. When you pledge $3 or $5 a month, you gain access to numerous hours, thousands of hours of additional Star Trek discussions. With the $3 tier, you get pre-shows, specialty shows. With the $5 tier, you gain access to pretty much everything we've ever done in the way of From the Holodeck, which is literally thousands of hours of additional shows. $5 a month, or you can do annual and get that monthly fee over and done with. $50 a month, because we give you 2 months free when you subscribe annually. patreon.com/rainmandigital. We actually got a lot planned for off season.
Yeah,
we have Section 31 discussions to get into, which is our way of kind of setting the path down for the spinoff series starring Georgiou.
Mm-hmm.
We started that a few months back before the season of Lower Decks started, we had jumped into our Section 31 discussions, which I think would be a nice, I think that's a pretty fun discussion to get into because it will refresh all of our memories when in the way of Section 31 so we can understand the or see the potential possibilities for the Section 31 spinoff with Georgiou when that drops on us. So we're doing that. We also have discussions on the Maquis we continue to do. Lots of different things. All right, Dave. So the Emerald Chain wants to reform their ways as they have already become a wealth of resources for many people in the galaxy, even having some of the greatest science institutes within the quadrant, so they claim. What are your thoughts on that with the Emerald Chain?
I actually was really surprised, but not in a bad way with that element, because to me, the whole thing between Vance and Osira and the Emerald Chain of the Federation is so much Star Trek.
Yeah.
That it's the one shining beacon in this episode, because I'm so happy that the Emerald Chain is not all bad. They're not like the gigantic evil empire
right
in the galaxy. No, they were there to help people out, and there was good things that they were doing.
Yeah, that was an interesting reveal.
The only knock on Emerald Chain when you look at it is Osira as a character. Is she evil?
I would say she's not. I would say she is a.
She makes very questionable decisions.
But what world leader doesn't?
Exactly. And that's the thing. To yeah. What ends?
Yeah.
What's the means to her end?
We learned a lot during that discourse between Vance and Osira. Dave, I would grant you that for sure. And it does present some questions about Osira's motives. It poses ethical questions, questions of morality. But the scene between Vance and Osira was a perfect example of just a well-written moment that cleverly disseminates information in a way that doesn't feel overly contrived. A political discussion that veered a bit into the philosophical, with phrases like, and I loved this, "The past is the only light in which we can see the future." That's fucking good. That's philosophical.
That's philosophical.
That is Star Trek. And when Vance dropped that and used that line, it was so impactful and so powerful. It's a statement for even us today. There are a lot of people that rather not look at our past, that want to forget the past. And the past is the only way we can learn. By understanding the past, you'll be able to understand the direction we possibly could be moving into.
Yes, into the future.
Right. And that's why it's so important to remember our past, because there's so much we can derive from that. And that wasn't just Vance dropping beautiful words for beautiful words' sake. It literally was a way to explain the very issues that the Federation is, or I should say the Federation currently finds itself in. There's so much sincerity from both sides.
Yeah.
And this and the subsequent scenes between Vance and Osira that followed is exactly how you should handle exposition. It really pushed the bigger picture forward, the bigger story of Star Trek forward, not just the myth arc, but the world of Star Trek, the mythos, just in a few moments of conversation. There was a lot said, but honestly, there were two key moments that we're going to focus on. One, the Emerald Chain has become powerful, persuasive, and a direct response to the burn. Though they are a brute force, they seem to have an interest in becoming more of a reputable organization. They figured they can gain respect and clean their image by joining the Federation.
Yes.
So that's number one. Number two, more importantly, Vance admitted that the Federation had been deeply compromised for reasons out of their control. We can kind of understand why they've become compromised because of the burn.
Because of the burn, yeah.
And that, essentially, over the last 100 years or so, the Federation has left behind a legacy of fear, isolation, that potentially clouds, you know, moral clarity. And it was heavily implied that there may be some type of comeuppance or a price to be paid for this. Perhaps Vance himself will have to pay by stepping down and answering for some of his decisions.
Yeah.
And I say that because if you look at the opposite side, Vance had agreed to all of the Emerald Chain's terms because there was a surprising amount of reforms. The only thing he had requested was that Asira removes herself from the picture and be held accountable for her actions, yes, that she stands trial, essentially sending a message to the people, right? Something that would add credibility to their arrangement. And it definitely leaves you thinking, because he admits all the wrong that he has made and the Federation has made. And if he's asking Asira to stand up and take recompense, then he is also essentially going to be doing the same thing. At least that's what I see. Because for them to move forward and to move on, both sides need to be held accountable for the decisions they've made.
And dude, this whole conversation too just oozes Star Trek.
Absolutely, does.
It's so much better when this entire scene is what we should have gotten in, say, the end of Picard, with instead of like all these flashy ships showing up and Riker basically showing up with, you know, Photoshop copies of his own ship, and basically there's a standoff and everyone just waves and says bye.
Toodaloo.
You have this moment when the two leaders of both sides meet up and have a discussion. And a very next generation way, diplomacy takes center stage. Mm-hmm. That's what we got to see in this episode. And for me, I was like going, that was cool.
Well, Dave, something that I really like and I appreciate, they show that we have a Federation here that's not necessarily compromised in the way that they have been infiltrated by evil forces.
Exactly.
And that's something that, or corrupt forces. And that's something that we did not want. We had said, listen, fine, have a Federation that has made questionable decisions because of certain reasons, but let's not have a Federation that has become corrupted and it's no longer really the Federation. It's just a shell of its former self, and it's simply the Federation in name, and that's it. But what we have here is a justifiable Federation. Yes, they've made compromised decisions. And the beautiful thing about Star Trek, it's always about the philosophy. And you can sit here and debate whether or not they made the right decisions.
Yes.
But having Vance voice it and say, I admit that we have done some poor things, that we've made poor decisions.
Poor decisions.
Is probably how I should say that. We have made poor decisions. By him voicing that, it actually fixes some of the issues that you may have. And I'm talking about us Star Trek babies when it comes to the Federation and what they stand for, their ideology. The fact that they are aware that they're not evil. They're aware that they had to make compromises in order to survive. We're in circumstances that are beyond their control. The burn changed everything.
Yes.
So to have him admit that, it feels more and more like we're getting themes of consequence.
Exactly.
For the last three episodes, or I should say two episodes, and hopefully moving into the finale, that ends up being a thing that ultimately, at the end of the day, the theme is consequence.
And you have to
pay. You have free will. You can make the decisions that you want to make. But at the end, there's always going to be a consequence. There's always going to be a time to pay for the decision you chose, whether it be good or bad.
And this is something that I feel that when I was seeing this, I wrote in my notes that this harkens to a philosophical debate that me and you have always brought up in the past when it comes to the state of the Federation in Star Trek, how it's a crumbling empire. It made decisions. It was wounded. It's a wounded animal, and it's been attacked on all fronts, and it's been weakened, and they've had to make decisions in order to survive. And the culmination of that is Vance basically saying, now we understand we made those decisions. We are willing to live with the consequences, but are you? And it was so awesome that he turns it on Osira, and basically the question is Osira willing to live with those consequences, right, and own up? Because,
well, that was the entire point. He openly admitted what he has done and what the Federation has done.
Yeah.
Now, Osira, are you?
And
thankfully, this episode was directed by Jonathan Frakes, by the way.
Yes.
Which, dude, fucking shit, dude. He's such a good director.
He is.
And to get what he got out of those two actors was fantastic.
And let's, in a lot of ways, this moment is so relatable, especially in today's world right now.
Absolutely.
With everything that's going on.
Life isn't black and white. It's gray.
It's gray.
Whether we want it to be or not, it's gray. Yeah, you're right.
And the question is, are we willing to live with the consequences of the decisions we all choose?
Yeah. Now, in the way of accepting or acceptance, we're asked to swallow a lot. We are quickly able to accept what Osira is saying as truth because of the lie detector hologram, Eli.
Yes.
That, thankfully, was introduced earlier in the season, because if they had fucking introduced that motherfucker in this episode, I would have been fucking screaming. But that's how you do it. They're called narrative plants, people of Earth.
Yes.
Narrative plants. When you plan to use something, you introduce it far sooner than when you actually plan to use it, so that when you do use it, you're like, the audience will be like, oh shit, okay, now this makes sense. But when you introduce something like a device that cloaks your life signs, and then 5 seconds later you use it, that is awful.
That is awful.
That's bad writing, people. So we can safely assume, getting back on topic here, we can safely assume that Osira was sincere. But this does leave, unfortunately, this does leave me questioning the entire plot. If she was serious about peace and was willing to adhere to reforms and abide by the Prime Directive, why did she hijack Discovery and not just simply set up a meeting with the Federation?
I'm willing to put out there that if you look at Osira's characteristics, how she's been portrayed, I don't think she would, as a character, make a decision like that.
Okay.
To just simply.
So is she the type of person that if she wants to date a man, she's going to punch him in the face?
No.
And be like, I'm going to punch you. You want to go out? I was trying to get your attention.
She's the type of person to go to that man and grab him by his shirt, rip off his clothes, and throw him in the bedroom.
Oh, okay. Well, that would work for me.
That's her. That's the type of person that she is. She's a very aggressive
she's aggressive. You're right. And no, Dave, it doesn't. I'm sorry, David. No, it doesn't work, Dave. It doesn't work. I know you're trying to be fair, but
I'm trying to be fair,
David, if she was willing. OK, let's say she had problems with everything and she just wanted a deal and she wasn't really willing to change anything about their way of life. Then I'd be like, okay, hijack a ship. But she was literally willing to compromise on nearly everything, officially become a member of the Federation and abide by the Prime Directives. If that was really her goal, then why hijack Discovery? There's literally no point. Why was she just attacking Kaminar? David, why?
As I said, maybe it's because this is the type of person that she is.
Okay. All right. Sure. Now, I'm a big proponent of great antagonists. As we know, some of the best Trek has always included a fabulous foe, whether they be a true villain like, say, Khan, or perhaps simply an adversary like Dukat in DS9, someone that is used to pose ethical and moral questions. Yeah. In many ways, DS9's Gul Dukat is the answer to Sisko's compromisations, to the very many compromises he made. In this episode, we find out that Asira is far more than simply a tyrant. She is an accomplished leader. You may not agree with her political, military tactics, but she does appear to care. But she, too, represents the Federation's compromise. In many ways, she rose from the ashes because the Federation shrunk into isolation out of fear.
Yeah.
She was a direct answer to the compromises of the Federation. I love that. I love when writers do that with shows, because everything, for every reaction, there's a chain reaction. And again, going back to Deep Space Nine's Gul Dukat.
Yes. And that, I got the same vibes as that. I mean, when we finally got to really delve into Osira's background at this point, I got the vibes of Gul Dukat, where it's basically, we know she's a bad person, but
at the end of the day,
she's a product of the environment around her.
Exactly. Through their isolation and fear, the Federations, they have pushed people essentially further into the welcoming arms of the Emerald Chain.
Of the Emerald Chain. Exactly.
Yeah, and they brought this element to the forefront with the introduction of Aurelio, a person born with a genetic defect and might have died if it were not for Asira. I like this aspect a lot because, again, staying within the context of foes and villains of Star Trek, it makes a one-dimensional character far more interesting. And we learn that Asira is much more than just simply brute force. She's complicated. She does, in fact, care. And many of the things that we saw in this episode help strengthen her resolve in that meeting with Vance. But we also see that there's moments where she's not willing to bend, and she's willing to make some of those decisions that even the Federation won't make. But how much better would this have worked with Aurelio if this element had been introduced early on?
Yes.
Why do you bring a character like Aurelio? Why do you bring this type of character in with just simply two episodes left?
The only reason why I think that you would bring him in is because earlier on, you portrayed Osira as this ruthless, she will feed her own crew, her own family,
yeah,
to a worm.
Right.
And without a care in the world, just feed him and watch him die.
Yeah, Dave, that's fine. And I agree with that. But you can create that fear and that type of intensity for a villain while also working to make them more multidimensional. Again, yeah. Gul Dukat, there wasn't ever a moment in Deep Space Nine that I didn't feel like if your back was turned, he would shoot you or stab you in the back. But at the same time, they're doing both. They're working towards making him more dynamic, helping you understand why he is the yes. way he is.
Like when they introduced I think it was his daughter.
Yeah.
In Deep right. Space Nine. And you suddenly see Gul Dukat as more than just this ruthless person. You get to see him as a father figure.
But yes, absolutely. And as the years go by on that show, he just gets better and better. But even in the first season, you didn't completely understand him because it was years to get us from A to B. But even in the first season, though, he was a fully realized adversary.
Yes.
He was complicated. He wasn't one-dimensional. You understood him. You understood his thought process. I feel like with this, it's simply there because, all right, we need to make her not so one-dimensional. So let's go ahead and introduce Aurelio now. It feels a bit weak, a little ill-conceived. If they had this planned from the start, we should have had scenes that included this. And yeah. I don't know why you couldn't have introduced this sooner, other than the fact that the writer of this episode was like, what if we make her not so evil? Good idea.
Good idea.
It should have been embedded in the very first few episodes when Asira was introduced. It wouldn't have taken away from the threat level. It would have made her less predictable.
And
if you have a character who you see doing all these good things, but then she's also making very harsh, brute decisions, suddenly you're actually more afraid of her. I just feel if you were to introduce her sooner, the audience would feel conflicted when she turns a phaser on Rin and kills him.
Yeah.
We like to have contradictory emotions about characters. We like to like someone and then be ashamed of what they did.
Yeah.
And that goes for our villains. Some of the best villains in all of Star Trek are like that. You kind of like Gul Dukat. There isn't an episode where I'm like, come on, dude, make the right decision. You can do it. Oh, you made the wrong decision. You killed people.
Exactly.
I mean, tell me, Dave, you didn't watch Deep Space Nine and root for him many times.
Oh, no. There are times when I'm like, you know, Dukat has like actually good point.
Come
here.
On, make a good decision.
Make a good decision.
I know it's in you.
And then he'll turn around and basically just go, I'm going to give up my body to these evil spirits.
Yeah. And there's other villains I can go into. Maybe we'll talk about that a bit more.
That'd be fun. But
in a Patreon discussion, but
you can go through a ton of the Star Trek Rogues Gallery and you can see that.
Yeah. It's just a little sad a bit when there are so many great things going on. And then you look at a character like this who obviously I know I said during our last discussion that possibly Asira wasn't the big bad. I can't remember exactly what I said, or I was surprised that she was. But if Asira and the Emerald Chain is the big bad of the season, essentially, then why did you not work on her in a more parallel fashion alongside the rest of the Discovery crew?
And it goes back to the one thing I've been saying. I honestly feel after this episode, one of the weaknesses of Discovery when I'm looking back and then we get to this episode, they were just trying to throw a ton of stuff at the audience and shove a lot of narrative story notes. And unfortunately, some of the story notes and narratives get lost because there's not enough time.
You think the Giorgio backdoor pilot, essentially, let's be honest, that's what that was. Do you think that took away valuable time that we needed for the actual story that was relevant to the season?
When you look at it now, and if the Emerald Chain and Asira was supposed to be the quote unquote big bad or the parallel for the Discovery crew.
Yeah.
In the Giorgio episodes, she's never brought up.
Yeah.
She has nothing. And can you imagine it? It'd be so easy for them to actually intertwine Giorgio's story with the story of Asira.
Oh, Jesus. That would have been good, actually.
That would have been really good because you have the parallels of this one very... We all agree, Giorgio was not a nice person. She's not. She's just very complicated and yet she was a product of her environment.
David, okay, so she's not a good person, and yet I would choose her and Asira both as my wives. Does that say something about me?
No. It's okay. It's okay because you're not the only one. Because, dude, I really wish after this they would have introduced Asira sooner in the season and actually, yeah, play with her storyline so that she has more screen time so we can actually have this build up. Because think about it. If you look at Asira, how they've portrayed her within these two episodes or the last two episodes, her storyline should go parallel with Burnham.
Yeah.
And if you started episode one with the story of Asira going on the parallel of Burnham, it would have actually worked perfectly. And then we wouldn't have, honestly, this feeling that it's the Burnham show. No, there's a reason why we put Burnham front and center is because we want to show the parallel. And the parallel from the get-go, we've been saying, is Burnham represents hope. Okay, What's does the polar
she,
opposite?
Does she at this point?
Well, in the very beginning and in the first 10 episodes, me and you have...
I mean, I don't think Stamos was feeling much hope when yeah. he got sucked into space.
When he got sucked into space.
I think he felt pretty hopeless.
That's another discussion for what's been going on lately, but...
Yeah, like, that wasn't... That, I don't know what type of hope you're talking about.
Let's say by episode 10. Before episode 10, Burnham was our hope. Burnham was supposed to represent hope. So, like, I don't know about past 10, but, like, if you were to actually put more storylines of Osira in episode 1 through 10,
yeah,
that would make so much sense.
Yeah, well, Dave, listen, it didn't happen. So, what can we do, right?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to go to a very quick break, David. We'll be right back.
Black alert. Black alert.
Free stuff is awesome, but free stuff that will spice up your bedroom is even better. Just go to adamandeve.com and select almost any one item for 50% off, and then we'll load on the free stuff. Just enter this very exclusive code, RAINMAN, at checkout, and you'll get 10 tantalizing free gifts, including a sexy item for him, a special toy for her, ooh, and a third item you'll both enjoy.
Ooh.
And 6 extra special bonus items that are sure to rev your engine, pique your curiosity, and even blow you away. Plus,
free shipping!
Always sent in discreet packaging. Go to adamandeve.com now. Get 50% off plus the 10 free gifts when you enter the exclusive offer code RAINMAN. Again, that's RAINMAN. Because without it,
no free stuff.
That's RAINMAN at adamandeve.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to Star Trek From the Holodeck. All right, David. So Burnham and Stamets.
I still laugh at this one. It's so shocking.
Is it shocking? Or is it expected?
No, this wasn't expected, dude, because this was a hypocritical thing that you would not expect Burnham to do.
All right. So logically, there probably should be some fallout between the two of them.
Oh, absolutely.
There has to be. I just hope we can find a way to move past it fairly quick next season. I don't think they're going to have a chance to deal with it this season at this point. There's only one episode left, and there really isn't a lot of room to deal with the fact that you chose to let my loved ones die and you flushed me out into space. So I'm hoping we move past it quickly and deal with it in the opening episode of next season. I'm a bit tired of whiny Stamets and the melodrama overall. So let's move past it fairly quick. We do need to deal with it. We can't ignore it. It's a big thing. From a story perspective, he should be angry with Burnham, to be perfectly honest here.
He has to be.
How many times has she made personal, emotional decisions? But then she forces him to sacrifice the two people that are important to him. I'm okay with hypocrisy. It's real. We are all guilty of it at times. But they need to bring it to the attention of the audience.
Yes.
And what I mean by that, it needs to be actually addressed by Stamets to Burnham. There needs to be a conversation between the two of them acknowledging how she puts things that are important to her above the ship and crew all the time. It's the reasons she's not the first officer. It's the reason why she got demoted. If they don't verbally address it, it just feels like contradictory behavior that's embedded into Burnham's characterization whenever they need the plot to move forward, opposed to a strategic attempt at weaving and fleshing out the imperfections of our characters. It's unclear whether Burnham, who's the chief science officer, can pull rank on the chief engineer, as I said at the top of the show, but it is, regardless, another shining example of how Michael gets countless opportunities to outgrow the person she used to be, yet she simply falls into old patterns.
Yes.
I'm still not sure how I feel about the entire scene when she chooses to Vulcan neck pinch Stamets.
Yeah.
The show started with her mutiny against someone she allegedly loved. Three seasons later, still doing the same thing.
She's still doing the same thing. That's why it goes back to like what you said. This has to have consequences.
Exactly, David. And again, if all of this has consequence, whether she loses her friendship with Stamets or someone dies, then I'm okay with it. But if this is just the writers pulling shit out of their ass, saying, okay, this will work, this will help move the plot over here, we'll be able to do this then, move Stamets, remove him out of the way, burn him over here. They're just moving pieces around the board, and there really is no rhyme or reason for it. There's no true motivation, and then I will be upset.
Now, here's the thing that I want to ask you about this, though. We know that basically this can't be resolved next episode. It just can't.
How? The Stamets
thing.
Right.
It cannot be resolved.
It can be addressed.
It can be addressed.
Yeah.
It cannot be resolved.
No, it cannot.
This is something that has to carry on into season four. And
honestly, I'm not team Stamets all the time. But in this instance, I am team Stamets.
I'm team Stamets,
too. He was done dirty.
And I'm like going, what about, we've been saying that Stamets has been a very stale character throughout the last two seasons. It's gotten to the point that we are tired of him being a whiny emo scientist.
Yeah, right.
I'm not going to say the B word because, you know, that's not very nice. He's a very whiny emo scientist.
He's a little biatch.
But like, I wanted to ask you, what if this leads to Stamets becoming a villain?
Oh no, that's not going to happen.
What do you think, though? I think I'm like going, I wouldn't mind if they went down that route because, hey, every decision should have a consequence. And how many times does Burnham have to screw over her crew till she understands that basically, hey, my decisions cause great consequences? Then
something, Dave. Villain. Honestly, I'd be okay with that. I don't think that's going to happen, but I would be okay with it because at least there's consequence. I mean, the way Stamets was yelling at her, saying, we all gave up our lives for you, and this is how you repay us. You don't write a scene like that and just breeze past it.
Yeah.
There has to be fucking fallout.
Yeah.
There has to be. I will be so fucking mad if there isn't.
If there isn't. And that's why I'm like,
David, if this was the previous 10 episodes, I wouldn't even be worried. I'm like, of course there's going to be consequences. But the last two episodes have felt very strange to me. And it feels like they're trying to run to the finish line. And now I'm getting nervous about some of these things.
Yeah.
There does seem to be a lot of themes pertaining to consequence. So we will see what comes of this. But as of now, I'm simply not on board with the idea, you know, having Burnham do what she did to Stamets. When do we get to see Burnham act like a Starfleet officer?
Exactly.
We've never seen her act like a respectable Starfleet officer. And at what point do we get to see her grow past some of her flaws? As I have said numerous times, Dave, I'm all about flaws in characters. I love it. It makes some of the most interesting characters. But we also got to have an arc. That's the goal of writing, David.
Yes.
If you don't know that. I know you know that, David, but I'm using you to talk to the writers of this show.
To the writers of the show.
What is an arc, Dave? It shows growth.
Growth.
One of the first things you learn in writing 101, screenwriting 101 specifically. There's an arc. Why is it an arc? Because it represents growth. What we're getting with Burnham is a line, a straight line with little nudges that go up for a second and come down. I want her to be flawed. I want her to always be true to who she is, and she's definitely flawed, slightly hypocritical, a little self-righteous. That's fine. Those are great ingredients for an interesting, complicated character, but she does got to grow. And
she has to get her comeuppance.
David, yes, she does. And there has been such a great opportunity early in the season, giving us that year to show us that she's matured and growed. Growed? Jesus Christ. What did I write this episode? You know, show us that she's evolved, become a better person. And And David, we need to see her make changes. We need to see her follow orders. And possibly maybe the idea, the concept of Burnham being the star of the show, or I should say Sonequa Martin Green, and having Burnham be front and center as the star, perhaps, or as the lead character, perhaps that's the problem in itself. The fact that you have a subordinate on board a ship that requires her to follow rules. Orders. What if she always followed rules? Would there be something interesting to do in this show when she is the lead, when she's constantly being told what to do? So maybe the flaw is within the concept of the show, that our main characters aren't in the positions of leadership.
Exactly, that they need to be in.
They got to do something. So I like the character a lot, but it just feels like more the same without any progress. And we got to get there. We got to see her come to the resolve. We need to hear her say, enough with the tears and regret. Oh, Saru, you're doing the right thing. Thank you, Burnham, but now you do the fucking right thing. I know I'm doing the right thing, except for leaving the ship in Tilly's hands, yes. And being emotionally compromised, yes. But before that, I know I did the right thing. Burnham, now you do the fucking right thing. Enough admitting it. Now act. I feel like I'm in a fucking bad relationship with a girlfriend.
Yeah. Yeah.
I promise I'm going to change.
And that's what Burnham is. She keeps promising us that she's going to change. And then all of a sudden she does something that shows she's never going to change.
And David, where the fuck is Saru? Seriously, the fake captain.
I was hoping you wouldn't actually bring this up.
Let's be clear. Okay,
David. Because I love Saru.
David, let's be clear. He's not a captain. He's no different than what Aurelio would have been to Asira. He's a puppet leader who hasn't made a firm decision yet. And has allowed emotions to take him off his ship, and then he loses his ship and places the future of the Federation in the balance because of his inability to command and make the right decisions. Again, Dave, if this is purposely done with intent, those illusions, the consequence, then it works. But if we are having our characters make poor decisions just to simply move the plot forward, I'm sorry, but that's some unskilled writing.
I know. And this is the thing that I hoped you would miss this.
Hoped I would miss it.
Yeah. Because like, I really like Saru. I want to like Saru. I mean, I've championed him to be the captain, be the first alien captain in Star Trek history. And I'm like going, it's not helping.
I think Discovery would have been better off if they just had been killed by the Section 31 AI.
I mean, here's the thing. In the last episode,
Put Detmer in charge? Detmer seems to be very well in control of her emotions.
Well, shoot, she actually suffers from PTSD.
The poor woman is suffering from PTSD, and yet she fucking holds it together every episode. She doesn't cry. She doesn't feel the need to share all the time. She takes control of her problems. Let's put Detmer in charge.
And it's so upsetting to me that basically Saru is being literally grounded into dust at this point. Like, no one takes him seriously. It's just like what you said. He's turned into a puppet captain.
Yeah. Let's be clear. He's a pussy.
And David, I'm like going,
he lost his ganglii. Did we forget that?
Exactly.
That he's supposed to be more predatory, more aggressive. And yet what we are getting is the same guy that we had in the first season. He's supposed to be different.
Remember the end of season two, me and you were like going, man, it's gonna be really interesting because they made a point to show that he's supposed to be more aggressive now, and that's gonna add to his being a captain. Yet this whole season he's been scolded by Vance, he's being yelled at by Michael the whole time, and then like no one takes him seriously.
Yeah.
He gives up his captainship to Tilly, which I still say I like that element because it helped Tilly's story going forward, but at this point, this episode, it did nothing for Saru.
Yeah.
And it's literally turned him into just like, okay, he's a doormat for everybody now. And it sucks because I've been wanting a character like Saru for Star Trek because I thought he'd be one of the best things new to happen to Star Trek because of Discovery, because we were going to get this unique captain.
If Admiral Vance is a real admiral, he would remove Saru from command.
Yeah.
And we've seen people in Star Trek lose command over far less things.
But then the question becomes, who becomes captain then?
I honestly think, Dave, in order to remedy some of these situations and remove the rapport between the crew, because we love their rapport, right? It's great, but it doesn't make room for an actual crew that follows orders.
Yeah.
And I feel like moving into season four, we may need someone as a consequence. We need someone else in command. We need Admiral Vance or whoever else is going to be in charge. We need them to put another person in charge of Discovery, someone who's not a part of the Discovery crew, someone who's an outside element that will demand respect.
Dude, what was that one captain?
It'll fix a lot of the issues if we had a captain like that.
Remember they did that in TNG with the one captain that took over?
Jellicoe. Yeah.
If they brought in a captain like Jellicoe on this crew, I honestly think that would be awesome.
Well, Jellicoe told Deanna Troi to get in uniform. Snapped her right in the shit.
Jellicoe didn't take no shit. Yeah, listen,
what's this fucking spandex shit you're wearing? Like, what, are you going to the gym? No, you're
get
not.
Get into uniform, goddammit.
Get
into
uniform. Like, what the uniform. Fuck is this shit?
Can you picture if Jellicoe was actually here?
Jellicoe would be pulling his hair out if he was the captain of Discovery.
Jellicoe would be looking at Stamets and go, God damn it, stop crying.
Are you fucking crying again? Let's get some goddamn testosterone in this shit.
Here's a tissue box, goddammit, that's your 100th one.
Does everybody, when they come on board Discovery, get injected with estrogen?
Jellicoe just gets off. Are you all pussies?
Oh,
are you
all come pussies? On. Listen. Yeah. I'm from a long line of strong women in my family. Like, that's the men in my family are weak, but I'll be very open. I'm so glad I took after the women in my family. And I've been around strong women my entire life. My mother, my grandmother, my stepmother, my sisters. They're all extremely capable people. Yeah. They don't fucking do this shit. Exactly. Enough with the goddamn crying.
Yeah. It's okay to cry once in a while.
Fuck.
But dude, I honestly think that actually that goes into one of my things that I think I'm going to add to my in our last discussion for like what we hope for in season four. I think you're right. I think we do need a brand new captain, someone who will kick this crew into gear.
It'll change the dynamic a bit, but also will keep all the familiar faces. But it will help things. If Saru was just to change overnight to a better captain, it wouldn't even feel right at this point.
I honestly think he should be demoted back to first captain.
Unless he learns from his mistakes. Now, if he learns from his mistakes, let's say one of our crew members die, which I think that would be the best consequence. I don't want to lose any of our crew because I really like them. But if someone were to die, that would be the best consequence. And then perhaps that will actually be a great motivator for Saru next season to be a better captain, to make better decisions, including Burnham.
Yes.
As well.
I honestly think if that happens, it should be Burnham's fault.
It should be Burnham's fault. And then ultimately, where does all fault lay? It always will lay at the captain's feet. So yes, Burnham is perhaps the reason behind it. But at the end of the day, who left his crew?
Exactly.
Saru. So if our two leads, which is arguably Saru and Burnham, have to face consequences, as it seems like that is the theme.
That's the theme
of the episode here. Then I think we'll be okay. I know we sound like we're being negative, but I feel like we're just trying to sort through everything. There are some red flags, but if there's consequences to all these actions, then at the end of the day, come the season finale, we're going to be okay. We're going to be fine. All right, Dave. So the Red Sphere Data has taken action to help the crew of Discovery. Now, I had assumed that would happen at one point.
I did too.
At the very beginning of the episode, you saw the movie play on one of the screens in the background.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, the Red Sphere Data is about to get involved here. The data has hidden itself inside the .23 droids. Is that what they're called?
Yes.
But there's a problem with this, Dave. If memory serves me correct, wasn't the data so huge the ship could barely contain it?
Mike, semantics.
David, I'm not being nitpicky here because this happened last season. I know. And it was literally
entire episode.
It was an entire episode, Dave.
Yes. Maybe it's evolved.
It's learned how to zip drive itself.
to restrain itself. Restrain itself with the technology.
So I was a little frustrated, but Dave, that was the first thing I thought of. I'm like, wait a second. I'm like, how?
There's so much data.
Could it be held?
Yeah.
And now you can put yourself into fucking droids.
And here's the thing.
David, it comes right back down to these are just poor decisions.
Poor decisions.
And there's no amount of, oh, it'll turn out okay in the end. Things like this can't be fixed.
Yeah, because it shows that they're not paying attention to their own stories.
Yeah, and that just now, if you're on season 10 and something was set up in season 1, then I would be a little bit more forgiving.
A little bit more lenient.
But this was last season stuff, guys.
How can you miss this?
I love the idea of the Red Sphere data becoming sentient. It opens a lot of doorways and potentials.
It adds to the story that basically we know where the ship has to lead to. Because like we all know the destiny of the Discovery ship is Calypso. What happens at Calypso? And the AI has taken at that point is sentient everywhere. So seeing this made kind of sense where, okay, all the red sphere data starts to actually figure out how to incorporate itself to every part of the ship, just like what we saw in Calypso. However, you brought the one problem that even I had where it was like last season, it nearly killed the ship.
Yeah, Dave.
With the Red Sphere data doing this.
Dude, this is just laziness, man.
Yeah.
I mean, and that goes into my final thoughts and RMD score. A canceling device hides life signs from sensors. Okay. Now, you might think, well, okay, canceling device was just introduced, so you can use it at that very moment, which number one, in any writing class, they'll tell you that's bad.
Yes.
And as a showrunner, if I was reviewing my writer's work, I'd say no. Sorry. Like, did we introduce this earlier in the season? Even 2 episodes ago? No. Then guess what? Get a little more creative.
Get a little creative.
Find another way to do it. I wouldn't allow it. It's bad. And this isn't a problem exclusive to Discovery. This is a current plague in a lot of TV. A lot of shows have forgotten the nuances of writing a series because we're in a so-called golden age of streaming. And everyone has every single writer can get a job now, whether you wrote newspaper articles or a mommy blog. You now can be a writer for TV. And because of that, they don't understand actual writing. But writing nuances of television, so you don't have people that are paying attention to the finer details, and you have people introducing things in episodes and there's no narrative plant. You're not planting it earlier on so that when it does show up, you're like, oh shit, I remember that. Instead, they say, how do we solve this problem? Well, let's just solve it instantly right now by introducing some random device. And what makes it even worse is, so it's a canceling device that hides life signs. And then when they figure out that there's someone running through the Jeffries tubes, Jake Weber's character says, they must have some type of canceling device. It's like, what the fuck? Who wrote this shit? I laughed out loud out of embarrassment for the writer. It was so bad. They must have some canceling device.
And I seriously was like going, Is it me or does Jake Weber's delivery of that?
Jake Weber is an intellectual. He's an amazing actor. He probably delivered it like that because he's like, fucking A, this is bad.
He's like going, wait a minute. Let me read that again. Okay, that's it. I'm delivering it like this.
He must have some canceling device. Wow. Yeah, so I'm going to give this episode an 83%. It is slightly better than the last.
Yeah, because of that Vance scene. The Vance Sierra scene is fantastic.
Yeah, and Dave, I'm wondering if some of these problems are because of the serialized writing. In years past, we had hybrid serialized Trek that started with... There are parts of TNG that were serialized, but not very much. I wouldn't really even call it hybrid. Deep Space Nine definitely was hybrid. Voyager, a lot more serialized. Enterprise, last couple seasons, hybrid, right? Serialized. But because you didn't always have, you know, the episodes written in a serialized fashion, you can allow time to go by. You were able to let characters marinate a bit. You're able to delve into certain issues, allow certain issues to fester a bit and go back to them. And because of that, there's a natural embedded way, or I should say an organic embedded way, to let characters grow. You let time go by, you tackle it again, three or four episodes. We're dealing with a serialized story that's given 13 episodes. And what's happening is you have a lot going on, and you're literally racing to the finish line because you have so much information. You have so much you got to do, and there isn't any time for breathers. There isn't any time. The most breathers the most episode that you can call, or I should say the episode that you can say that's closest to a breather episode was the episode with Adira and Burnham on Trill.
Yeah.
And look how great that episode was. We need more episodes like that.
Yeah.
If you're not going to go the distance and really flesh out this grand story, and you're going to have something, let's be honest, relatively ho-hum. The Burn is Sukul, whatever his name. What the fuck is his name? Sokal? whatever his name is. And then you have Osira, who, again, and not that epic. Then why not make this story more nuanced and more grounded and slow down and focus on key moments, key characters. I hope they learn from their mistakes, because there's definitely some things falling off the wagon towards the end. So yeah. 83%. David, how about you?
I gave this episode a 80%. It's not the worst of the season. That still is regulated to the last episode. I enjoyed this episode more than that more than the last episode, simply because of the Vance and Osiris stuff. The Federation and the chain, the Emerald Chain stuff, had me so engaged because you finally gave us more substance to the universe in the future. You gave us this brand new faction, the Emerald Chain, that started off as kind of like this ho-hum. They're basically, it looked like it was just a atypical evil, you know, criminal syndicate faction, right? But in this episode, you literally made them more than just a underground criminal faction. You gave them purpose. You gave them, you put them in parallel with the Federation and bringing up the theme of consequence, which is something I think should have been handled more throughout the season. If you were going to go this route with this story should have been kind of fleshed out a bit more throughout the season. About consequences, about like the choices of the Federation, the choices of the Emerald Chain. All that stuff should have been interwoven throughout the season, and all of a sudden, instead, it seems like it was condensed and shoved into this one episode. And it's kind of like that whole thing that I've been mentioning in the last two episodes. They just seem to be throwing darts at the wall and hoping to hit a bullseye. And with this particular one, they did. They nearly hit the bullseye with the whole interplay between Vance and Osira. However, everything else was kind of like a downer. I was really upset that Saru wasn't even in this episode. However, he's supposed to
be. David, that's why I say he's a fake captain. How do you not have the captain?
How do you not have the penultimate captain episode?
What?
When he's at center stage at the cause of the burn. And if the burn was your main story arc, you mean to tell me that basically you have one episode that suddenly you thrust us into the whole thing about the Emerald Chain and the Federation, and the burn isn't even talked about that much, and you don't deal with like where our captain is? That blew my mind. And then you have the incident with Stamets and Burnham, and I'm like going, this whole season, you have gotten me to like Burnham. The entire writing crew in season three should be applauded how they have reformed this character that a lot of the Star Trek faithful have rallied against. But right. This past season, in 10 episodes before this, she's been like the highlight of the season. And suddenly she does her same thing she does. And in honor, you alluded that basically, is this worse than what she did to Giorgio? I think this is worse because, because here's the thing with Giorgio, she was young. She made a choice when she was still, you could kind of say, new to the game. Now she's had time and experience to do that, to make actual leadership type decisions. And she makes the same goddamn decision that she did in the beginning of season one. That's unacceptable to me when you look at writing a character story arc. A character story arc should never backpedal and go back to stage one. No. You constantly, just like what you said in throughout the episode, we move forward with our story, with our character arcs. We move forward. You never go backwards. And in one moment, they took Burnham backwards. And I'm like going, okay, that brings down the episode a bit. So, but I'm hoping that they kind of actually show this in the next episode, that her choices lead to consequences. And this is going to be a learning moment for Burnham. Okay. I'm going to hold my judgment on that moment till the next episode, which is the finale. And just like what you said, I mean, it's just strange creative decisions that they made in the last two episodes that seem to kind of bring the series to kind of like a screeching halt. I mean, we've gone through 10 episodes giving 90s and almost close to 100s on the sheer strength of the writing. And in two episodes, suddenly you see the red flags show up. Why?
Yeah.
Why would that show up now? And in the first episode, I'm willing to say, oh, it's the writing staff. This episode, this has the showrunner's fingerprints on it. This falls on Michelle Paradise. You should actually have control of your writing room at this point.
Yeah.
So we've been giving her A pluses all over the board. This is the first time we get, you know, she gets dinged a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that basically the season finale, she remedies everything, gets us set for season four, and takes it from there.
Yeah. All right. We'll see what happens, right?
Hopefully.
What, are we going to die? Hopefully we'll see what happens next.
Well, you never know. I mean, after season one, I might like I might jump out of the window, Mike, if all of a sudden this just gets worse.
I want to thank everyone for listening. Be sure to head over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/RainmanDigital, and pledge. Gain more access to a lot of in-depth Star Trek discussions. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Live long and prosper.
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain?
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.